Look to the stars, sing out your own song, be still, let your life flow in sync. It takes a man to suffer ignorance and smile. Stand firm in your crease. Let the breeze blow the white lilies. We can enjoy all of life's gifts. Everything has its place. Maggots aid the decay of form. With each moment, we are reborn. We are free.
Next up to that is my teacher, Mary O'Connor. Hi, that's a hard act to follow. I wrote this because of events that we were bombarded with on the news. It's called the Bling Bling President. With his new inamorata, Nicolas Sarkozy cuts a dash. But for many, his new lifestyle has become a tad too brash. His track record with the ladies has the media been used. Sauteur and mean philanderer are some adjectives being used. Way back when he was younger, he even set his sight on Chirac's lovely daughter, till her daddy saw the light. As newly mayor, he joined a star who's passed his sell-by date, to a beauty called Cecilia. The marriage wasn't great. Enchanted by Cecilia's looks, Sarkozy lost the plot and made a play for her himself. The husband he forgot. That wretched man put up a fight, but took a heavy blow when the day his wife walked out on him with their two kids in tow. She went to Sarko's residence. He'd left his wife as well, and as his aid in politics, was able to excel. But when the two were married, she soon got itchy feet and hightailed to Morocco, where she began to cheat. By now, Sarko was president and found this hard to bear. He gave himself 100 days to win her fair and square. But when he failed and got divorced, Miss Broody saved the day! A man-eating polygamist was entering the fray. Eric Clapton and Mick Jagger were her lovers in the past. Now she's fallen for Sarkozy, hoping this affair will last. So while the French economy is grinding to a halt, they carry on regardless, as if no one were at fault. Now since writing that, subsequent events have proved that I need to add an au revoir. So this is the envoi. I hope everybody saw my colleague's head, because if they didn't, this won't mean very much. Nick O'Leary scored a bullseye, though Carla was distressed. He won't give her $500,000. His ad was just a okay, next up to the open mic, we have a limerick diplomat. Dominic.
Let's start off with a poem I just wrote there last Saturday week. I was driving home and a poetry program was on the radio. I was driving home in the car and took the book Jessie Lane Denny and Salmon Poetry and all the things that she had to go through with that I could identify with when she started off publishing. So I just started publishing ourselves and everybody wants to sort of, well, they won't give you any money anyway to do it. And they'll give you every reason why you shouldn't do it, you know, and you have to be totally unreasonable to actually get it done. So I could identify that. I wrote this poem in my head as I was driving home, and I just wrote it down as it is here when I got home. It's called The Splash of the Saddle. That first break of the water, that splash, how heavenly it must have felt, still gliding through a membrane of delicious word stream, knowing the ripples would only break through to the shore many miles away and unrecognized. What courage it took to face the unknown, to swipe off the arrows of intent, for only the brave survive to spawn and return to the source of their life. Truncheon-like, you sway through the timeline to become a force. Like that first blister of flesh that burns pure, you sucked deep, thumbnailed your efforts to become what you are despite the entropic ways of nature. Your star shines as moonlight severs the dark of ignorance and apathy. Rejoice. Sing. You have met the world head on, and it knows you. Thank you very much. Gene asked me to read this poem because he writes a lot of poems about his father. And we had a guest at the White House some years ago, and he said that you never really start writing till you start writing about your parents. And I think he's right, anyway. And so this is a poem I wrote about my father, and Mark dedicated his reading to his father tonight. His father just died a few weeks ago, but my father died when I was very young. I really didn't get to know him. I was just sort of grasping at memories, really. So this is called The Timber Box. My father did the dirty work down at the mill, where the dust of mahogany, beech, and pine from the four corners of the world was sucked in by innocent lungs. As he oversaw life in the mill, he ended up overlooked, chasing and harrying the boys, pandering the bosses. His veneer of responsibility and authority became the plank of his existence as his life splintered and scattered like the sawdust that blew through the mill. Discarded and forgotten, wages paid for 3 months, dead within a year, and laid to rest in a timber box, he entered a lifetime ago. Thank you. Now, I can finish with this one. This is a rant, I suppose, really. I was inspired by an Allen Ginsberg poem, America, if anybody knows it. And I took part of a line out of it and use it in this poem, but I won't tell you what it is because you'd probably say it's the best line in the poem. So I won't give you that opportunity. This is called Ireland. Ireland. Are you the daily dose of plasma pulsing television, of politicians shape-shifting between ideologies? Ireland, are you the multicultural patchwork blanket of flesh that covers our cities and keeps us warm in our Celtic tiger skin? Ireland, are you the bloody beast of history? Are you the gangs, the feuds, the killings? Are you the Ireland of banning everything from books, talks, to magic mushrooms? Ireland, are you the goddess of pets be the goddess gone Ireland? Ireland, are you the dog shit underfoot, the excrement of racial prejudice, cocksure in your intolerance? Ireland, are you the poor monks? Are you the saintless saints who never worked a day in their sinless lives? Ireland, are you the four-leaf shamrock, fake but true? Ireland, are you the kick in the butt from humanity, the drunken man of the world, the whore of society, the fool of cities, the genius of suns, the inexplicable heart of towns? Ireland, whoever you are, you're here, corporate, corporal, the sly look at a pin's face, the shoddy deal of offshore accountants, the sickly hand in the pocket of the poor, the thief, the lover. Ireland, are you really free? You're known forever in the EU trough and smelling America's ass. Ireland, you bastard, you bitch of a mother and father. Ireland, you exhaust me as I push my shoulder to the wheel of your mad drunk drive machine. Ireland, are you the hell in a posh painting? Or do you exist only in the imagination of proto-Celtic man who dreams of emerging out of the primordial soup of consciousness to cover the earth like a moth? Emerging in a photosynthetic haze from the mirage of existence, a one-cell amoeba containing all the secrets of the universe, waiting to become the inheritor of this stony ground this piece of rock left of center with a spinning spiral galaxy of dust somewhere in the immenseness of space. Thank you very much.
You. Ingredients, apple and tart. The first step is to get the apples. These can be bought readily enough. If you live near an orchard or a neighbour with apple trees, it would be silly to waste money buying them. It will, however, require advanced planning though, say the night before, as you're likely to be spotted in the daytime. Tools you will need. Tool one, a knife. The knife should be blunt. Never use a sharp knife in a kitchen. They are far too dangerous. Sharp knives can save time, but you're better off saving lives. Besides, the flavour of a tart is totally spoiled if the intrusive ingredients like chopped fingernail or blood are included. So use a blunt knife. It will take a little longer, but it's better than having your fingers a little shorter. With the blunt knife, cut the apples in half and lay them down flat on the board. Tool two, a heavy mallet. Now, your TV cook will be all into peeling and coring, slicing and dicing, but you needn't get fussed about any of that fancy stuff. It's not necessary. Just take the mallet. To be honest, a shovel or wrench would easily just take the mallet and deliver a crushing blow to each of the halved apples and go on beating them until there is no more resistance. Then, with the blunt knife, sweep them onto a plate. Now, as I say, there's no need to peel the apple at all. Leaving the skin on gives the whole affair a nice green hue, and green is a very in colour. Don't worry about leaving the pips and stem and spiky bits in. They are excellent sources of dietary fibre and add interest and general variety. So, put 3/4 of a pound of flour into a bowl. If you're not good with weighing things, don't worry yourself. 4 big handfuls is fine. Now, if you feel this doesn't look right, throw in a few more. Do not fill the bowl completely with flour. Leave room for the milk, butter and sugar. Now you must avoid it being too wet, since when you put it out to roll, it can run away from you. You could end up chasing it around the kitchen with a roller. This is not good cooking practice. The solution is to shovel more flour on if it looks too wet. But if the tart has too much flour, it will become too dry, and the plate in the oven can begin to look positively volcanic. If you think this is happening, you could, in a last desperate attempt, try sprinkling milk into the oven, at least to douse the flame. Now, butter is an important ingredient too, and can be squeezed from the silver foil quite easily. It can help if you imagine you're wringing your boss's neck. This is also a useful thought to have while you are squashing and generally bashing the dough about. You could use a wooden spoon too if the thought of beating your boss would have worked better for you. The vital thing is that it should be done thoroughly. On no account should you leave him only half finished off. The sugar, lastly, can be sprinkled lightly like a shimmer of hesitant sunlight, or allow it to descend in an avalanche, depending on how good your against it is. Finally, the approach itself. When you've overcome the dough, divide it in half, in with the apples, the other half of the dough on top and Bob your uncle, or lesbian aunt, whatever. Now, one final warning. Try to keep the final mould moving all the time, as I have found that it can sometimes tend to set before it gets anywhere near the oven. A rolling stone gathers no moss, so whatever you do, keep it rolling. Give it plenty of air as you head for the oven. Sweep around as much as possible. Many famous chefs, particularly French and Spanish, do this. It gives them an air of importance and a sense of urgency. This sense of urgency is a good one to nurture. Okay, to quickly in the oven at 140 degrees Celsius or whatever. It's just don't turn it up full, as there's no point in being choked by fumes or burnt alive as well as going hungry. All you have to do now is wait. It is, I think, safer not to wait in the kitchen. There's no need to lock the door or anything, but close it firmly. If you feel that things might not work out too well and are uneasy about remaining in the house, you could always drop in on a neighbour, take a six-pack and watch the match. You can always ring the fire brigade from his house.
Able to watch Rachel and if she did stuff like that. That was brilliant. Thanks very much. Well done. Okay, next up to the open mic, Patricia. Thank you, Jennifer. I'm only mostly short and sweet, so the title of this poem is Let Them Eat Cake for Beginners. Here's to thee who carry no affection nor disease. Probably at your will, a pot, you promise the gift of health to all but who cannot afford it. I salute thee. A first cap high up in little stone spurs you to turn the page. To then the girl crippled from the spine downwards, wincing in pain by a mere blink. Here's to thee, bureaucrat too, left to my forehead to fester on a trolley for 2 days, with only a pigeon for company. Here's to thee, those wash your hands of all involvement in the so-called service. I ask you, do you wash your hands while visiting a hospital? Here's to thee who feasts while others fast and filthy dead. They yearn for the chicken coop, knowing they'd be safer there from the fox who siphons off the country's taxes to ravage the hen house of the dying. Here's to thee, thieves. Hail of the day.
Thank you.
And this is what is called the virtue of value of danger. At once, my enemy, a blank page, stared at me an organized mess of rows and columns, jottings, and loose pages of indolence. What I purport to have achieved is thrown back at me, remembering how I scoffed my own lines. Cartoon cruel, I have become the worshipper of my own arrogance. Gearing through the library steps, to this, broken mind you, again, I ripped, threatening my silence preceded by a mobile ring, is it 10 euro fine? Or else, fine, I won't do it again. Wash my mouth out with Guinness, to be truly Irish. One must obey the stereotypes, no matter how well we are fed. The leprechaun dances in the south corner of the gift shop, thrown tacky with demands. Sorry to insult your vanity, but things never work out that way. The superior tinted urges burst into an image of the reckoning, and we'll hold the night light into the corner, begging our turn to form. Thank you. Thank you, Patricia. Okay, next we have Brian O'Mur. Yankee pronunciation.
Thank you, Brian.
Any apologies? Students and volunteers at Bureau of the Karanu from Jackson Shukachi. And it's been good unit to Ashu Khan from the audience. It's called It was inspired by something Paul said last week about this stuff going on online and it's called Ode to My Suicide Bomber. There is only one country in this world worth dying for, and that is the country of love. There is only one religion in this world worth dying for, and that is the religion of peace. And there is only one business to be in this world, and that is the business of happiness. But why die for your country when you can live for your country? And why die for your religion when you can make love for your religion? And why die for any corporation? Someday I will have in my pocket here a picture of the Prophet Muhammad, drawn by my own hands, hugging the infidel Jesus, drawn in the back of the bayonet. Why? Because I can, and I'm in a free country. So to you, my suicide bomber, I say this. Put down your pack. Let's have a chat. Let's have a pint again.
You.
Doom.
This next one is from the dreams I've been having during the week. I'd like to live in a land where spiritual signposts become my dreams, where the words that you speak in the hearts of these poets become the poetry that will dance in my ears delightfully. In a world where churches didn't compete for your mind or for your money, where nobody is afraid to be a clown, where nobody wants to be Bono or Oprah or anybody other than themselves, I'd like to live in a world where people may love dancing with the ebb and flow of consciousness. Where Tantra teachers are invited to share their experiences of God in sex from the pulpit. Where sex is as sacred as any of the sacraments. In a world where grandmothers, God bless them, are still dreaming of having it. And sharing their dreams openly with the rest of us. Where every room of the mind is opened and explored and all its people treated equally, including those in my head with disabilities. I'd like to live in a land where at least once every mother would arrive home from work or from the shopping spree with two hippies that cannot be bought by society, to demonstrate to your children that there are forms of education other than they presently know, as the car that takes them further away from where they really want to go.
Is there a house her father's death with the prince of the apostles, in silent lines of wishes. Young fathers, old fathers, grandfathers, fathers sitting in their father's seats kept warm by their fathers. Fathers who used to abuse, abused fathers, sober fathers, now sober fathers, fathers who couldn't say it, fathers who wanted to hear it, generous fathers, miserable bastards. Fathers who forgive, fathers who want to be forgiven, fathers who needed to be loved, loving fathers. Fathers who couldn't love, fathers who could, fathers who wanted to love, expressive fathers, silent fathers. Fathers who shared, greedy bastards. Fathers who never did, forgiving fathers, forgiven fathers, who took their seat from their fathers and learned the gift of acceptance. Fathers who needed to be forgiven, fathers who need to forgive. Fathers who wanted to repay, fathers who wanted to be repaid. Romantic fathers and a horny bastard. Healed fathers, healing fathers, fathers who wanted to hear sorry. Sorry fathers. Fathers who used to shout, fathers who were shouted at, noisy fathers, silent fathers, generous fathers and mean bastards. Punished fathers, fathers who punished, fathers who acknowledged, acknowledging fathers. Inflicted fathers, fathers who inflicted, honest fathers, dishonest fathers, hard-working fathers, lazy bastards. Funny fathers, grumpy fathers, fathers who hurt, hurt fathers who listened here and perhaps for the first time learned the gifts of understanding. Blaming fathers, blamed fathers, accusing fathers, fathers accused, hugging fathers, unhugged fathers, passive fathers, and narcissistic bastards. Fathers who were always there, absent fathers. Fathers who had favorites, fathers who were, fathers who didn't, and fathers who weren't. Charitable fathers and stingy bastards. Isolated fathers, fathers who were included. Fathers who ignored fathers. Affectionate fathers, fathers who craved affection, fathers who wanted to share, fathers who couldn't. Fathers who couldn't hear, fathers who couldn't listen. Timid fathers, cruel bastards. Fathers who were distant, close fathers. Who accepted and understood and learned the gift of forgiveness. Fathers who simply couldn't. Fathers who could. Fathers who eyeballed, fathers who never looked, fathers who never saw. Remorseful fathers and harshless bastards. Fathers who had no fathers. Fathers who kissed, unkissed fathers. Fathers who were involved, fathers who were never there, isolated fathers, fathers who were isolated, capable fathers and incapable fathers, tidy fathers and messy bastards, sad fathers, happy fathers, ready to welcome their sons, accepting fathers who know, understand and accept themselves, forgiving fathers who forgive themselves and embrace love, fathers who love themselves, fathers who need to go and rest in peace. And let their sons rest peacefully. Is every son a house? Thank you.
Next up, we open mic to James Harrington.
Thanks, Jen. Mobius magazine. The Strand. Again, I walk alone along the viscous sand and pause to cast a stone beyond the spit of land. A stretch of evening beach, that lonesome, a curled lonesome call, the lack of empty speech as scented shadows fall. And at low tide, the feel of sponge between my toes and green crabs gently steam beneath their seaweed clothes. A splash, you spin too late to spot concentric rings, perhaps a buoyant skate beyond low water springs. Vacated moorings mark sea's unpredictive mood and seasonal slipway start where dinghy folk had queued. Steep ledge of rocky dome, where free-range mussels crab, in freehold shelly home, the furtive hermit crab. Shy bait, compressed in dread, a cul-de-sac dismay, 180 turn and stead, needs room to get away. A dainty wader bird, his rapier stabbed so quick, the gull he looked absurd, she's yet to learn his tricks. Mature, few heads concealed, reversed inside his cave, the razor-toothed eel, I did have one close shave. Small fjord of magic spells, the final waves refrain, the starched layers of shells, sluiced well beyond the stain. The sconce of seascape sun, shards squinting to and fro, his opaque prisms run their pyrotechnic show. Inside the harbour's mouth, a brace of rocks portray the danger all about, unlit till break of day. The Red Queen Baron is the name of this. God's Gable End. Lump hammers and chisels ring in the moonlight. Bold Norman commission removed in one chunk. Improper, Monsignor, shedding scant lichen should never be mounted on God's Gable End. Lugged to the causeway while crickets are rasping, jumped in the seaway, don't utter a word. Oh no, gasped the mermaid, sheeling a gig. Shiver my lumbers, who ordained this? Dockyard. The rasping scream unleashes a cascade of sparks, angling across steel decks to the last green hearth pile and beyond, where the spring tide line is drawn black on green, landweed strewn with seaweed. Welder's blue arc sizzles in a pyrotechnic burst as the heron gazes like Narcissus into his likeness. Silence again, except for the steady rhythm. He turns his long neck to gape at the squash holds, pulsing the bluntness where it droops lightly over the edge. The hidden pump gushes its mantra, pachung, pachung, pachung. And I just do a limerick. Hard shoulder. Not cold shoulder, no. Hard shoulder. A driver who broke every rule, quickly passed out every fool. 12 points later, with stirrups and gaiter on the bypass, hee-haw on his mule. Thank you.
Two poems from 1985, before some of you were born. First one is called Sam and Hugh. First poem is Sam and Hugh, which about the famine raged across East Africa around that time, and has quotes from Ronald Reagan's ambassador to the United Nations as an epigraph, which goes, "Food aid is our most powerful weapon." And the structure of the poem is adapted from the structure of Holland's Land, owned by the Jewish Holocaust. I have to acknowledge that for those of you in the audience who are well read enough to know the language at all. Harsh surface daybreak, we eat you at sundown. We eat you at noon in the morning, we eat you at night, we eat you and we eat you. We eat a grave in the dustbin, there one lies all dry. A man lives in the White House. He slithers with letters. He types. When dusk falls on California, your peroxide hair might be radiant. He types it and steps out of doors. He swings a helicopter up to the stars. He swings his multinationals out. He whistles his black boys out of the dust and has them scrape for a grave. He commands them, boogie on down, mother. Part starts at daybreak, we eat you at night. We eat you in the morning, at noon, we eat you at sundown, we eat you and eat you. A man lives in the White House, he slithers and rattles, he types, when dust falls in California. Oh, your peroxide hair, Nancy baby, your ashen hair in a comb of buddy. We eat the grave in the dustbin, there one night all dry. He calls out, scrape harder into the dust you lump. We others let the boogie on down. He grabs at the dollar in his pocket, he waves it, his eyes are blue. Scrape deeper you lump with your paws, we others let the boogie. Part of daybreak, we eat you at sundown. We eat you at noon, in the morning, we eat you at night, we eat you and we eat you. A man lives in the White House, your peroxide hair, Nancy baby, your ashen hair, in Como buddy. He slithers with the rattlers, he calls out so sweetly. Play death, death is the mistress in my apple economy. He calls out more darkly now, to your dance, brother, then as dust you will settle in the ground, then a grave you will scrape, there when night all dries. Part of daybreak, we eat you at night, we eat you at noon. Death is a master from his apple economy. We eat you at sundown, in the morning we eat you and eat you. Death is a mistress from his apple economy, her eyes are cool. She strikes you with leaden promises, her aims untruth. A man lives in the White House, your peroxide hair, Nancy baby. He sets his multinationals on, he grants his grave in the dust. He slithers among the rats of the daybreak. Death is a mistress from his apple economy, your peroxide hair, Nancy baby. Your passion here in Como Buddy. This is a poem written for a woman who didn't deserve it. So many geraniums in our house. So many geraniums. We are deafened by the multitude of kettles stretching open in the morning, all at once, all together. And the air suddenly fills with perfume, as if it were swept there on the tail of a gale. So many geraniums. With the newspaper's jagged edge, I could cut the veins in my fingers, they were so soft and touching you. I listened to your voice, so musical, I need never hear another song. And your hair is enough to clothe me in the coldest storm. The paths you lead me along twist like a dancer's belly. They are so dark, I need never close my eyes. So musical, so dark, so many geraniums. You fill my mind with so many thoughts. There are not enough windows in the world to frame them in. If ever you left me, there's not a building high enough to count my fall. So many steps that I tumble down in my own mind. So many steps, so many thoughts, so many dreams.
Right. The brilliant night is made even better by our own Italian diplomat, Marta Bastiani.
Il cielo è d'acquarello, è il cielo di un presepe con le stelle appiccicate. Ho paura del cielo, troppo grande per me. Quando lo osservo, per poco, ho un vortice nella testa e mi acceca il cuore. Passeggeremo anche una volta sola insieme, sotto un cielo così. Mi aggrapperò al tuo braccio per non cadere nel vortice. Mi proteggerai dal risucchio e mi bacerai. Ora lo conosco il cielo e lo tengo nel taschino della camicia. È un cielo d'acquarello anche questa sera. Lo porto a casa nel mio letto e farò l'amore con il cielo. Il cielo ora mi ama e io amo lui. Non ha mani ma mi accarezza tremando un poco. È timido il cielo, è fatto di dolcezza, è fatto di cioccolato, quello svizzero. il cielo è d'acquarello. Portalo a casa anche tu. Il cielo è una sguardrina. È da pagamento, se lo guardi. Paghi col cuore oppure con l'inutilità. Paghi con i sogni e con l'incredulità. Il cielo è d'acquarello.
And I think I recognize Chocolate. I'm delighted. There's no one way to tell me.
Bravo!
Bravo!
Michael O'Brien, up to the mic.
This one's legend, Johnny Cash was bad actor. Hell hath no fury like a Latin woman scorned. In Seton Paul's exile, I listen to Johnny sing this famous song and wonder how an earth I ever fell. Retrace the labyrinth through my mind, explore the nature of my essence, and explore mind and explore the memories of your presence. With bare feet I linger tentatively on amber cold, a phoenix discouraged by broken wings, waiting silently in the flames or cataclysm towards the gates. I believe in God, for in those moments I was God, transmigrating unconditional love from me to you, without boundaries, without limits, without control, nailed to the cross. That authenticity is important for your soul. A river's blood flows crimson in the sea, no time for miracles. Disingenuous truths concealed by sleight of hand, betraying the house of God. Now, Jesus is long since dead, and I am but a man. His moral conscience, the hangman's rope, but there he submits for my feet.
I'm working on with about 20 to 30 minutes for 9 speakers, so the more economical you can be, the more polite to the other speakers. 15 minutes for 9 speakers, so poetry minutes. Come on, Finbar, yeah.
This is a poem based on Irish mythology. It's about the Battle of Moytura. And for those who really don't know what the battle is about, it's basically Tuatha Dé Danann, where the good gods and the Fomorians are the bad gods. So.
Second Battle of
Moytura. Yeah. Second Battle of Moytura. It's called Moytura Dó. And beyond the mists, beneath the sea, water dark and stark. The Fomorians arise to face the sunlight shone by love. The battle awaits. Banner of the evil eye, one look and victim die. Fomorians, oppressors of the Tuatha Dé Danann. Brettel, unworthy son, a greedy king. Dishonorable, unkind, a dirty bastard ruler. To fight the warriors of true honor. Tuatha Dé Danann will triumph then. Oma, master of the arts, Dagdag, good and merciful, Nubida of the silver arm, caused Fomorians a lot of harm. Lug, master of all skills, Fomorians sail across the sea, Tuatha Dé Danann, waved by the shoreline, insults fly, obscenities hit the sky. The battle begins. Full load wild, shields locked together, spears at the ready. Brandish your sword, pack them down with our axes. Form the line, watch them die. A bloody gore fest. heads collected as our trophies, celebrate as they meet their fate. The men of virtue win over. Look, the triumphant trusts spear in the valor's blackened heart. Valor no more, reduced to gore. The sun shines forever. The land flourishes aplenty. To his day down on, victorious today. Go to one of them.
I apologize to number 14 because I can't read your name, but I know your surname is Harding. Dog. Lee Harding.
No, I'm sorry.
I know, Daw. Thank you.
George. I'm sorry. This is prompted by Dean, and I can't debate with Dean. It was written about a period only named by Hatsworth Mobetal before this word came into the common language. It's called Alzheimer's. Damn Alzheimer's. The bathroom thing didn't really become apparent until 2 days. It stayed so long. We should have seen the signs, the odd socks, the frayed short collar, unsuited to one so immaculate. Once you held your head in your hands for an age and whispered to yourself, I am losing my mind. We thought you were only looking for notice, as your vet nurse suggested. It is sad we two did not talk more. God knows when the time still could. The time you went next door, the only time, to Mrs. O'Sullivan in your pajamas, she thinking you were in the pantomime. And the gobbledygook, people assuming you were late in comics. God damn, we could have talked. God damn, we still could have talked. I remember the first sweater you bought me, all leather and laces. You kicked to death by my new friend. For a short time, the envy of the gang. You probably hoping I would be the next Stanley Matthews. Not to be. 30 years later, you were the one doing the dribbling. On your bib, in your nappy, strapped in, to your wheelchair and me a stranger. No chance, talk no. There was a ruling in the Supreme Court on the 16th January. Since then it's become kind of topical. And it's something that people don't like talking about. This thing went into the Supreme Court and he walked out to three men. Called pedophile. May you burn at the stake of tender sticks. Acted slowly by a still furious breeze. Very slowly consuming your feet and calves. You screaming loud before the distant end. A tender child screamed before those flames. The heart is dying, but the rage is raging. Young hearts are young, but young in name, and the young names are aging. And now the flames creep slowly towards your spine. Caress your trembling sides as the piper's tongue. Not much for the old dead to be dying, but the dying ones to be the young. Little boy, your magic eyes are glowing upon your baby sister's curls and smile. You see nothing but her beauty, and unknowing, something watches. Blood flows upon the tiles. May your teeth grind to mulch when the flames roast your testicles like chestnuts on a London street. May you be sodomized by the violent sodomite moment, Satan's harbour, the tombs upon their feet. In your hell, eternity is too short a time. And all the time you have is worth having. While here on earth you leave behind your crime of the undead. They are left to go on living. Thank
you. Thank you. I'll give it a try. Two,
was written when generating blood with the passion. When I'm the head of the youth, and how blood is all good cameras, sweaty walls, bad cheekbones, and good crack, which never will die in Ireland, Europe. Whether I'm from sex, terror, trial, blind, corrupt, Ireland, Europe, and I hate being famous for it. You won't argue with me anymore, and no one ever goes on about it now, thank God. It is about the difficulty in obtaining snake dung. It's called big deal or castaway. Tommy was looking for a funny spot, cause that was where he had. He jumped in on the train's found way, shopping on the old path.
Dear Derek, a fiend uncool, a reddened famine, to tell you the truth. For him was no problem, so Tommy was from Wilton.
Pills dropped them off in good bout time, he and they pass. And this was this deal of crap the boys that saw up the hill in the autumnal cold. The boys scrambled up, came in and drew with not like that was cold. Let's go to walk the fast 103, I had some in our minds in the uniform. There's about dogs in pounding up the bath. Derek scattered in sight for a second or two, but round here by the coast lines, the highways and byways will never do. Death on their minds, debtors hand in hand, priests may duties they must do. General was asked saying, why do you want so much? Why? Why do you want so much? So much as Sammy A. Russell and the three wise men would give us a clue if they were wise men. In Bray, with a lanky girlfriend, one fine day, a safe and Lazarus from eternal damnation, set in vampire code, one smoked angrily for under a 5-spot for pack when then jumped her blue.
Thank our most hit performer was it was that kiss, that long, slow drawl of the kiss that started it all. It tasted of warm honey, of the subtle, unobtrusive, never-ending yearning, like a glance. At first I hardly knew it was there. It turned soon to the lustful press of flesh on flesh, the probe of tongue on tongue, the tease, the touch, the fear that all the shimmering might stop. I remember spinning, every movement was a blur. I wanted to stop, but I didn't want it to end. But I knew it, I felt it, every kiss needs its breath. This one, damn it, has to end. So I did it, I broke off, I ended our full-on, suicidal, live-it-to-the-end relationship. But I think for a moment, I was actually in love with her.
Unfortunately, we've only got time for one more, yet we've got three poets signed up for. So that's why we're so crazy with the kissing people off. So the next one up on the list is Dave Winter. Thank you.
A loner who owned a private world. I used to have a record that played beautiful music. Large black women singing to God with horns and drums and bass. It was my favorite record, though it's broken. No matter which side I play or where the needles drop, all I hear is strangers crying. I do not cry. I have not for about 5 years now. I think it is a good thing for me to have this record. I listen to it more frequently now that it is broken. When I fall asleep listening to the record, I dream of the touch of skin, soft and warm, like that of a beautiful woman that I have not met. There is no woman, only the skin touching me on all sides. Sometimes, but not every night. I touch the very fine hairs, as on a woman's arm. I fear that soon I will wear out this record. For a long time after that, I may not hear anyone cry. The dilemma. I do not wish for there to be any more sadness in this world than in my own, but I will miss that sound. The sound of color dripping into what I own. The world that I call my privacy. Thank you.